Life hackers. So this episode is special. I mean, all the episodes of Happiness Patterns are special, but this one is different because we talk about death. And commonly, usually in everyday life, that's not something we share or talk about with our friends or even our family, because there is a great fear and it's actually a taboo in many ways. So I invited Peter Mertel, who is a senior teacher of Asian Classic University, and he has practiced death meditation for a long time. And that's something I learned from him around 5 years ago. You will learn more about the concept and about Peter's journey in the course of the interview. So I will not say much more, but I'm kindly inviting you to be very present in this episode, because just the fact that you contemplate about death, just the fact that you are listening to this, is actually already a meditation on death. And I'm quite sure, and actually 100% confident, that if you listen to the end and if you start asking yourself questions about death, because it is a part of life, and it's a part of life that we usually put somewhere really deep into ourselves because we're afraid. But if we look into this, this will change your life for better in the best possible way. So without adding or saying anything else, you will hear me and Peter talking after the intro. Patterns of happiness are frameworks that always work. They are tools and practices that will bring permanent change to your life for better. We're not looking for temporary solutions. We change and transform. We practice what we preach, and we're gonna share it with you here. Be careful, because you can become seriously happier today. I was thinking, I just would like to share the story why I contacted you and why I really want this conversation to happen. So it was about 5 years ago, and I think it was a part of ACI program, but maybe it was just a separate event dedicated to Death Weekend.
And we did a Death Meditation Weekend.
Somehow it turned out to be a really life-changing event for me, like really transformative. And already during the event, like the second day or maybe the third day, I was organizing events in Kyiv at that time, and we already decided to cancel some of them, even though it was financially lucrative for us to continue with them. I realized that if I die that day, that's not something I wanted to do, definitely. Good. Yes, because somehow it wasn't bringing or creating any love in my life. It was just something I was happy with only financially. But inside of me, I felt that it was wrong. And also after that weekend, at that time I lived in Moscow. So the weekend itself was in Kyiv. We returned to Moscow and I got ill. And for about a week time, I was just ill. But it wasn't bad kind of illness. It was really good kind of illness, because something was happening.
I know what you mean.
I felt that something was kind of dying, that I was cleansing. And the time has passed. I mean, 5 years have passed. But still, this process that we had at that time, it still lives with me. I often ask myself this question. And last year, we lived on Cyprus for about 3 years with my wife and our baby. At a certain moment, I realized that even though financially it was good to stay there, it no longer felt right for us, for our family. And at a certain moment, I realized, okay, if just everything ends today, I really want to end this job as well. I want to move with my family back to Moscow for now, and we'll see what happens afterwards. But so this is something that is with me. And for this, I'm really grateful to you. And this is the topic I would really love you to discuss with me today, to get into today.
Super. Sounds very good. Very happy that you could act on it and take it in so easily. For many people, it's a really difficult. And our society doesn't want to talk about it. And it's actually, if you think about it more, it's a sign of, how do I say that politely? Of very, very low spiritual IQ. Do not think about that you have to die.
I would love us to start in a couple of minutes to talk about death itself and its meaning and how Buddhism looks at it. But before that, can you please share a little bit about yourself? Mm-hmm. Who are you in the sense that how do you call yourself inside of you? Are you a coach or are you a Buddhist teacher? Who are you? Can you please share and how you came to be that person?
Right. Thank you. I mean, first of all, it's really good to see you again, also, Dimitri. You know, we haven't been in touch, I know, for a long time, but we also, I think I saw you on some events very briefly, but not like we didn't sit down and talk for a while. It's a difficult question how I see myself, but I'll tell you about my background. I mean, I'm originally from Austria, right? I grew up in the middle of the mountains in southern Austria, had a very peaceful childhood, and then went to agricultural high school, went to the army in Austria, and then business university. And then I worked for an international company in Sweden, and I lived in Sweden for 20 years. After 5 years at the multinational company, I went to a startup company, which was from Austria in Germany. And there I worked for 10, 12 years and became part owner. And somewhere on that road, the main owner gave me a book from Michael Roach called The Diamond Cutter. And that changed my life radically. I mean, it was 2007. And that gentleman, Michael Roach, he describes how he became extraordinarily successful by practicing, by using what he had learned as a Buddhist monk. So he is actually, I think, the first and I believe only Westerner in 600 years to complete the traditional Geshe training, which is a tough thing to do. It takes over 20 years. And part of his training was that his coach, well, you know, Tibetan called Coach Lamak, I guess, he told him, you know, if you really understand what we are teaching you, mainly that the world comes from your own actions, from your mental seeds, then you should be able to tweak reality like in Matrix and create something and prove to yourself that you actually can create what you want. And he wanted him to go and start a business in New York, which he did. And he co-founded and built up the still biggest production company in the history of New York City, which was sold in 2009 for $250 million to Warren Buffett, which is quite an achievement for someone who had no training. I got that book in 2007. And one of the first things that Michael Roach is talking about is actually not one of the first, but pretty soon he's talking about death also. It is amazing in our world and culture that usually people never talk about it, but it's the only thing that will happen for sure. Like if you ask any one of the listeners, like, do you know if you'll have a job tomorrow? I mean, probably yes, but 100% can't say. Will you have a good relationship if you have one right now in a week? I don't know, you know, probably yes, but you can't say. And when I met my wife now, who is a Russian lady, right? We met in Kiev, which therefore will be always a city which is extremely close to our hearts. When she moved to me, I started to talk all the time about, you know, you have to understand that in Buddhism is called renunciation. You have to realize that my life is meaningless until you do something valuable with your time, because time is short and we must die. And the reaction she gave me, and many people have when they hear about it for the first time, is basically they think, if they are shy or they say, if they're a little bit more brave, don't be so negative. don't be so negative. You know, we'll have a day or a week or a month or a year. And that is a super big misunderstanding, which I'm so happy that you realized that. I didn't even ask if you realized it. I can see you realized it because of what you told me. If you really face the fact that you are impermanent and that you are mortal, which is what my lama calls me. My name is Myrtle, right? But he calls me Mr. Mortal. If you really face that fact and become a friend with that fact, it's the beginning of becoming happy. Why? Because if you really think about it the way you did, no one will have to tell you, please change your priorities. You're going to change them because you're thinking, well, if I die tonight at 6 o'clock, right, which is a practice, this is what people recommend. Right? Maybe we talked about that in Kiev, I don't know. You're not supposed to pretend to die at 6. You're supposed to think, tonight at 6 o'clock, I'm going to die. Wake up that day and live the day with that realization. And then you will change a lot of things in your life. Not because anyone tells you, but because you realize, well, actually, I don't know why I've been doing this for 10 years or whatever. Like, it doesn't make any sense. If I have to die tonight, I definitely don't want to do that. And it's super beautiful. So I can, it's just one of the, it's for me, it's the first huge step towards a happy life.
When we even talk about it, and even though I think about it every day, the fact itself that we discuss it, it brings some adrenaline and some tension.
Yeah.
We're talking about something real.
Right. No, it is real, yeah.
Can I share with you one quick thing?
Sure.
Last year, we accidentally just took a session from one astrologer, and it doesn't really matter whether we did it or not.
Right.
But one thing that touched me is that he talked about the time of death, and it doesn't really matter whether it's true as well.
Right.
I mean, whether this day is true or whether tomorrow is true. But the fact is that someone from the outside told me that my wife is gonna die someday. It brought me shock. I mean, even though I was contemplating and I'm contemplating on these things regularly, when I hear it from outside, it brings another reminder and I feel, okay, I'm actually mortal. But okay, I kind of understood that I'm mortal, but I haven't really thought that I'm mortal. And I couldn't imagine that my wife is mortal. Then every priority starts to change. Everything starts to change places.
It gets a lot of clarity, I think.
That's the right word. Everything becomes really clear.
Like, wait a moment, you know. Why am I doing that? I don't really like to do that. Oh, it's just because I'm scared. Oh, forget it. I'm doing, you know, it's your life. So, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's what I wanted to share you, is that I didn't really take seriously the fact when it will happen, but I take seriously the fact that it's gonna happen with us. Definitely, I realized that one day, long ago, you went through this event yourself. You took, you had this death weekend yourself. How was it for you?
I mean, I mentioned it a little bit already, but first of all, it was extremely liberating. The two words that I would use to describe it is liberating and it creates clarity. Anything that liberates you will make you a better person because you're going to act and react from another foundation. If you never think about death, if you put it away, you're not stupid. You know it's going to happen and part of your mind knows that you don't want to think about it. I mean, if you ask anyone, are you going to die? Everyone will say yes, but no one wants to think about it. So there's a level, we call it a blind spot. Like the, it's like the horses who have the I don't know how to call it in English, that those black things, so they can only see ahead and not the left and right, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about that is taking away those blind spots to some degree. And you see, oh, wow, there's a green field over there. I don't want to run on the road. kind of. And so it is liberating and it brings clarity. One, another thing which was extremely surprising, and I don't know if you can explain that so that it intellectually makes sense, but I guarantee it will become an experience, is that you start to have more compassion with yourself. And that's a huge step towards loving yourself a little bit more. Why? Because if you really face the fact that you're going to die, you know, a lot of serious things become a little less serious. In relation to that, come on. You didn't get a sales deal or, I don't know, your wife left you, which is bad, right? It's not a good thing, but still, it's a reality check. And so if you become a friend of that, even in a very bad day, or maybe especially during that very bad days, think, okay, something bad happens, but what would I want to do if I die at 6 o'clock? And probably a lot of people will want to, you know, talk to their mom or dad or want to sort out old relationship issues that they never wanted to sort out because they thought I will have time to do it at some point. And then they hang on 30 years and then they die and they didn't sort it out. That's what happens, right? All those lingering relationships, but also simple physical stuff that is in your cellar or in your storage or in a kitchen or anywhere, you're going, you know, when you have that clarity, it's like, why do I keep that? I'm going to die tonight at 6. I don't need that. Like, kick it out, right? And it frees you. So everything you own, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing to own stuff, but I'm saying everything you own takes up some space on your hard disk, which is your mind. And there's a simple proof for that. Like if I ask anyone what's in your fridge, even if you are not standing in front of the open fridge, you will know roughly what's there. And that takes up mind space, right? Is it bad? Not really. But there's a lot of stuff you're probably owning that you somehow know somewhere, and it takes mind space and slows you down. And it doesn't really do something for you. And so the death meditation makes you, we call it death meditation, right? Because you can really think about it. Makes you leaner, it makes you just more happy. I mean, it reprioritizes your life, and it's one of my favorite things to teach also, actually, because it has such a quick effect. If people can take it on, not everyone can take it like you did, but it's nearly an immediate change, which is beautiful.
Does it make you fearless, or did it make you fearless?
Sure, there's a certain degree of, because not wanting to talk about it, the reason why people don't want to talk about it is because they're scared, which they're not aware of, right? Like, no one, if I ask someone on the road and say, are you going to die? They say yes. I say, do you want to talk with them? I say, no. And I say, are you scared of this? They say, no. But subconsciously, the only reason why I don't want to talk about it, because there's a level of fear, right? It's not like you're not panicking or anything. But it's uncomfortable. You don't really want to look there. It's like the horse thing with the Scheuklappen in German. I don't know what thing it is. Like the blinders, I think it's even called. So, and when you take them away, the world opens up, and you, of course, you become a little bit more fearless.
Maybe it's not a nice question to ask, but at the same time, it's a very real one. Right? After you went through this process, were there any deaths of people that you knew that happened in your life?
No. Sometimes people think like that. If I focus near people going to die around me, I don't think there's any correlation to that. But if someone dies after you get that clarity, it hits you much deeper because it confirms what you knew. And if you wouldn't have done the meditation, they probably also died, but you wouldn't think about it much because, well, someone died. But if you get clarity on it, it's the big equalizer, I think. You called it also like that, right?
Yes.
Which it is, you know. And it makes so many things, like, you know, if you want to be rich, which is not a bad thing, right? If you want to be wealthy, have good relationships, or if you are not wealthy, if you're poor and you have bad relationships, the moment you die, we're all equal. You can't take anything in this world with you except the good and bad actions that you did in this life. They carry you forward.
I recently read the book by Robert Svoboda. Mm-hmm. He's a very guy. And
which one did you read from him?
Agora. It's called Agora.
I read it also.
So there he shares about the students of Shiva.
Right.
And they spend time in Smashan. That's the place where the bodies are burned. And they think, not only in Varanasi, it's in Benares. Actually, it's almost everywhere along the Ganges River. He shares that it's the best place for the death meditation because, for example, if you come to temple, can meet a girl there whom he likes and he forgets about God immediately. But if you come to the place where people are burned, you can hardly think about anything because everyone is crying and the bodies are burned. So it's hard to forget.
Yes.
Just one of the things I was thinking about lately.
Only when you get clarity on a certain situation, you can do something about it. And so, we know that from companies, from organizations, right? If they are in denial that they have a problem, let's say with, I don't know, customer care or product quality or whatever.
Yes, yeah, I understand.
They ignore that or they don't want to look there. It's a death penalty, right? Because it's going to continue. if you acknowledge it and say, oh, we have a problem, then you can start to do something about it. It takes balls, right, to face the problem. And so a lot of the very authentic and intensive spiritual paths on this world, they use death first as a wake-up call, which on its own already liberates you, as we just talked about. But then many of them, if you really spend time with them, and I'm, you know, saying more than a weekend, like you really invest time with a path, eventually they're going to describe past and future lives, and which is related to death in Buddhism especially, right? And that's a very difficult subject for many people, because they say, well, I don't know if that exists, or, and it doesn't really matter. But, you know, in Christianity, we have the paradise idea, right? Which also means, I think no one, no spiritual-minded person really believes that your mind can stop as the body stops, which is it's a separate discussion. But if your mind continues, it means also that we as beings are much, 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 much bigger than we ever thought we would be. Not in a physical sense, right? I mean, Peter is not 200 pounds heavier or taller or bigger in that sense. But if it's true that our mind continues after death in some capacity, and you can only get to that point, and if you want to call it like that, realize that truth if you face death first, because otherwise you don't get even to the border. But if you face that, accept it, and then you work on it, for example, through meditations, then you will maybe, if you work hard on it, okay, you remember certain aspects of past lives, maybe, and you realize that there must be future lives, then the whole thing becomes another game changer. It moves to another level. Because then you realize, I as a person, the way I thought about myself, the way Peter thought about Peter when he thinks of Peter, is completely wrong, because right now I'm taking a certain form. But if I had a past life, it was a completely different form. And if there would be a future one in whatever capacity, it would change again. And so me as a being is much bigger than I thought, which again, right, same as before, changes your priorities radically. Because usually if you ask anyone on the street, you say, okay, I understand. Let's not talk about death. It's a little bit uncomfortable, right? If you stop there. And then we say, okay, you know, I don't know, Michael, then what's your vision of you? And people will then, if the vision is limited by death, which you don't want to talk about, it limits what you would want to achieve naturally, because there is no continuation in your vision of afterwards or before. So, of course, with those boundaries, you will say, well, good job, good relationship, house, you know, if I can manage that, I can take care of my family, maybe I can do something for my country. That's great. If you allow yourself to look into the fact that you'll have to die, one blinder is removed. If you continue to work on any spiritual path, and you realize that your mind will not stop when your body stops flopping around, another blinder is removed. And then the vision of who you are is suddenly, just with those two things, right? Radically different, which is cool. You know, it's not you get more scared and you're like, wow, there, you know, what am I doing here? Maybe I could do something completely different, because anyway, the mind will continue. And so that's, coming back to the question before, is what actually happened with me when I got into death meditation and continued to work with me.
Powerful. I don't know, for me, even being with you right now and discussing it, it's very transformative. Oh, I know this, but it keeps on doing the job. Can you please share some practices? And in this sense, I actually believe that listeners, if they already listened to us for 30 minutes, they're ready to try.
They made it so far.
I mean, definitely they will check the title and it will read very clearly what this episode is about. But I mean, if they are so far, that means that everything is good.
Well, that's, to be honest, you know, that's one of my favorite themes of all is the idea of meditation, because in my experience, there's a lot of hype around meditation right now, which is cool in general. I love it. But there's also a lot of wrong understanding of what meditation means. So the Tibetans, which is what I've studied for the last 12 years, they basically use the word meditation for another word as concentration. So there is no difference between focusing on something or meditating. Which means, you know, anyone who is listening, you cannot, I repeat, you cannot think about nothing. I mean, you can try, and the effect will be that your mind becomes more and more wobbly, and like you're like after you had a couple of beers, like it's not sharp, not focused, but it's not what is meant when you say meditate. So whenever you meditate, you need an object to focus your mind on. If you want to do a death meditation, actually what I described to you already, the easiest form would be to make a decision, let's say for a month, okay? To wake up every morning, and while the eyes are still closed, but you become aware, think, how would I live my life if I died today at 6? And then cut the if out, which is hard, that's another step. I'm dying at 6, what am I gonna do? And then feel the fearlessness in you, because you have only got, like, I don't know, 12 hours left. What are you going to do? And if you can keep that up for a month, I believe your mind will change radically, irrespective of doing anything else, which is pretty amazing. Now, if you want to go deeper, I'm about to say, try to find a good meditation teacher, but there's a... What I did is I studied the ACI courses. I mean, that's my background, which is the Asian Classics Institute. It's an institution that Michael Roach, the guy who wrote that book also, right, the Dhammakata, founded, I think, 93 or something.
We will have all the links in the description.
Oh, cool. I'm really trying to think, you know, if I'm new, like I read the book, right? The book helped me a lot, because he's describing the world in a completely different way. He's basically saying everything you do comes from how you've treated others in the past. And I would recommend that to anyone, because it's just a life changer. But then if you're still interested, right, what I would do personally is you can go two ways. You can either go to DCI events, which happen on different places in the world, they're especially huge in Asia, or you can start to study the ACI content, which is available on the internet for free. It doesn't cost anything. For many people, a lot of work. I loved it. You know, I was so, because of what we just talked about that death idea, and then going beyond that and realizing, you know, if I've had past lives and I will have future lives, like, how can I change, not just to get my immediate needs satisfied, but how can I design me as a being beyond that apparent limitation of birth and death? How can I radically transform? And the most successful and best way I know to do that is the ACI courses.
Peter, returning to the whole death topic, I wanted to ask you something. I know someone who died recently, and this guy's spouse, she shared that they knew that it could possibly happen with him, but still they weren't ready, in the sense that he wanted to live more for his kids and for his wife also. When they realized that he was actually dying, he was extremely frustrated. And he was so frustrated that he would leave not sufficient funds for them, or...
Regrets.
Yeah. Regret. There were many regrets. And he was actually even swearing at that time because of all this frustration, because it was the final moment and the most powerful moment of his being helpless. Not even... because he no longer exists, but because he cannot take care of his loved ones.
Right.
I would like to ask your vision, and also Buddhist vision, for this last moments, and how Buddhism sees this moment of death, how it should happen. Because I realize that many people might actually end in this regret, but basically what I feel is that maybe it doesn't really work. I mean... can be done, so swearing is not the best way to do.
Well, that's a very good question, Dimitri. I was a little bit shy about how deep I can go with you and your guys, but if you ask me that kind of questions, let's go deeper, you see. But the goal of Buddhism is to stop that, which is a, I know it's extremely cheeky to say that, you know, but that's the goal of Buddhism. And Buddha Shakyamuni, one of the first things he said, the goal of Buddhism is just to stop old age, disease, and death. And it's not to relax, you know, it's not to have a calm down, have a good meditation, and then go back to work and be more relaxed as you get older and die. Because every meditation you do, right, if you sit for half an hour, you're half an hour closer to death. Every yoga class you do, if it takes 1.5 hours, you're 1.5 hours closer to death. After this podcast, you and me and all the listeners are 20, 30, 1 hour closer to death. And realizing that is waking you up. But then Buddhism is giving you a multitude of tools to first understand, which is extremely important, that what I said is true. So intellectual understanding in Tibetan Buddhism is extremely important, that you can stop your death, why and how, which basically again has to do with that the world, the beings, and even your own body and mind comes from mental seeds that we plant, mainly how we treat other people. But that's a big call, right? I mean, that takes some ACI courses to get your head wrapped around that. You see, in Christianity, I'm a Catholic. I grew up as a Catholic. I still feel I'm a Catholic. There is this idea of confessing your sins. And that is an extremely good idea before you die. Meaning to scan through your life, thinking about mistakes you made and said, and disown them. Saying, that was a mistake. I don't like it. If I could, I would never do this again. And if you, as you're dying, you can actually say, I'm never going to do this again because it's only gone. So that is very powerful. You disown the bad things you did. But then, and this is something that where the transmission in Christianity is not really clear at this point. I believe it was mostly in the past. You should spend equally much time on the being happy about the good things you did. So if you're swearing as you're dying, it's not really a good thing because that doesn't do much, right? But if you think back and say, oh, I would have liked to not done this and this and this, then it will lessen that action. It will lessen the gravity of your deeds. And as your mind is being carried forward, it's not going to drag you down. If you can focus in the moments before your death about the good stuff that you did and that happened in your life, then it's very powerful and beautiful and it will help you. However, okay, to be very honest, if you don't start to train that before, it's really difficult to do it at the most difficult point of time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like people say, I mean, we've done, as you know, we have for now 10 years done many, I don't know, hundreds of seminars everywhere in the world, Russia, Ukraine, Europe, United States, Asia, right, China, Thailand. And I have never met anyone who came to me or to Geshe Michael or to any of the teachers and said, I have a big problem. What? I have a half an hour in the morning where I don't know what to do. That has never happened. Everyone is busy. So when people say, oh, I don't know, I don't have time in the morning, I'm like, come on, you think anyone ever is saying, oh, thank you, finally give me another half an hour more to do? It's not like that. You need to change your priorities, right? But if you do change your priorities, you can transform the moment of death. And then you won't feel regret, you won't feel heavy, and you will be able to carry very good energy. But that takes practice, just like riding a bike needs time to learn and speaking a language.
In regards to what you just said, can you please share about your daily agenda? I know that you're a hardcore meditator. Just this morning, Masha asked me some questions regarding the interview, and she actually said that you're meditating at this moment. I know that what you do might be tough for most of the people, but still, can you please share what you do?
Well, It's so beautiful, you know, I didn't know what to expect from this interview, but it's so beautiful because it really started with the theme of this podcast, which is, I got the wake-up call. I have a daughter with my first wife, and she was born on the 16th of May. A month later, on the 23rd of June, which is very soon, my mom died. So Life and Death was within 5 weeks, very closely together. Yes. And that woke me up. I was like, boy, you know, this little piece of meat comes out of my wife, which I now call my daughter. And here goes the rotten body of my mom after 65 years. And what's in between? Like, right? What's that? That would woke me up. And that triggered that I got the book from Michael Roach about 9 months later, actually. Anyway, so I was very motivated to get engaged. And I meditate every day. It's really, really important if you know what you're doing. You need to do it well. You can meditate poorly and it doesn't help you. You can meditate well and it's the most beautiful and powerful thing you've ever done in your life. Why? I still have a very active life. You know, I ran 3 marathons. I did, at the army, I was at a fun fighter unit. I did parachuting. I'm a scuba diver. I know, I speak 3 languages. I had a company. I did a lot of stuff. And now people say, well, what else is to do? You know, there's so much, many people going on the Mount Everest that this is becoming already like a factory nearly. Not good, but. And we've conquered the tops of the mountains and the depths of the sea. What's left? And what left is going into our own mind. Which is, marathon running is nothing compared to meditation. You know, I know this is cheeky, but it takes a lot of
physical slog. And actually, it's a cool name for a podcast and actually for a number of workshops.
That's true. And I know because I tried both. But the important thing, just like when you run a marathon or you do any long-term goal, right? You have to start and you have to start small. Like if you start running and say, I'm going to run a marathon tomorrow, you're crazy, right? You have to get going, and then you have to get used to run 5 kilometers, and then you celebrate, and then if you can run 5, you can run 10. Then you can do 10, and then you get used to that, you celebrate. If you can run 10 kilometers regularly, I know you can run 20, which is half a marathon. And so you walk your way slowly up. But I meditate every day an hour, and the quality of meditation, thank God, over the 10 years, because I have had some extremely good teachers, has improved radically. So what I would have called meditation in the beginning has nothing to do with what I'm calling meditation now. There's a huge shift. It's a journey I can recommend to everyone. But you need a coach. For good meditation, you need a coach more than anything else. And then I would study to remove those blinders that we all have. We're talking about two major ones. The one is not wanting to look at death at all. The second one, which is much harder to conquer, but still you can conquer it, is to realize that you have been around for a lot longer than you thought. And you will hang around for a lot longer than you ever expected. And the ACI courses do that with you. They transform it. It's the feeling sometimes is, you know, the way we present it right now is very much not in a religious context, because it's just describing how our mind works. And that has been very helpful for a lot of people. And then yoga asana is another thing, which, but actually any kind of physical activity. If you do a lot of yoga asana, if your body is very open and smooth, the death process is radically different compared to if you don't do anything.
I will ask you one thing. If you feel that it's not appropriate, it will be okay, but still. I remembered one thing that you shared about the 10 perfect breaths.
Yes.
I actually love this story of yours, and actually it's with me for many years.
Yeah.
Because it teaches a lesson, actually. You shared that you were trying to concentrate for 10 breaths on your breath, actually.
Yeah.
And you couldn't
easy.
Make
it. Sounds super easy.
It sounds super easy for everyone. I mean, whoever I talk to, they say 10 breaths. And then they would just space out on the third breath. They would just start thinking about something. And then they would return back when they're already on the 16th.
Yes.
So basically, they counted out.
Thank you for just mentioning that. I mean, that was another huge wake-up call for me, actually. Because I wasn't really interested in meditation, but then I heard about it. And then the 10 breaths is a perfect warm-up for good meditation. You need to get your mind into neutral gear. Like, usually we're busy or we're tired, and you need to kind of get into the middle between tired and busy, where it's sharp and bushy-tailed, like focused and nice, right? And the 10th breath are a good example. But what usually happens to most people, including me today, this morning before the podcast, right? When you start to do the warm-up, say, okay, I'm going to put my focus on the tip of my nose, and I'm going to watch the breath go in and out for 10 breaths, starting with the out breath. Why? Because the last thing this life is going to do is to breathe out. And then focusing on the in-breath, one, out-breath, two, in-breath, two, and so on. And I remember doing it the first time, and I thought that's such a stupid, silly exercise, but what the heck, let's do it. You know, I've done more stupid things in my life, which took longer. So I sat down, I started to do it, and I was thinking, this is silly. What's going to be there for lunch? And I was like, wait a moment. You know, I lost the object. And so then I came back to it and tried again. And the experience is, it's incredibly difficult to stay there for even 3-4 breaths, let alone 10. And that woke me up. Because where's the guy that I thought I am, who speaks those languages, has a company, is cool, you know, car, apartment, everything. I can't even focus on one thing for 10 breaths. Are you kidding me? What am I doing for the rest of my life, right? And that woke me up. Who's running the show? Like, who? And that got me interested in meditation. And then there are a lot of different ones that you can start after you do the 10 breaths. You can do Tonglen. You can do death meditation, which is a beautiful long one. You can do Lamri meditation, which is actually a path to perfection or to enlightenment, if you want to call it like that. But then there are hundreds and thousands of meditations that you can do. In emptiness meditations, that the things around us come from our seeds, which is another topic.
Thank you, Peter. And I really appreciate it. Thank you for your time. And you see that many stories that you shared are still with me.
I'm happy it helps you. And I really am happy that you know, you never know when the audience is a little bigger, right? You never know what the people take with them from whatever you say or do. But it's really nice that you could use it.
Life hackers, you can find all the links that Peter was talking about, the Diamond Cutter book, ACI and DCI, in the description of this podcast. Please check it out. You can also find a link that you can use to support Asian Classic Institute. As you remember, Peter shared that they work free of charge and they provide all the courses free of charge. But of course, there are people behind this. And moreover, they're still putting in the digital version all the old Tibetan and Buddhist manuscripts, which are priceless. So it demands a lot of resources. Live hackers, how was it for you? I would love to hear your stories. Please send an email to info@happinesspatterns.com if you have anything to share about this episode or about other episodes. I'm really sincerely curious. Also, there are thousands of people listening to our podcast around the world, but there is only one person in Japan. So if you are listening this part, this outro, I'm really curious who you are, because you're like the only person in Japan who found this podcast. I'm really curious. Please send me an email. I'm really interested. Find us on Instagram under Happiness Patterns. We share some wisdom almost every day. We have already recorded the next episode. It's gonna be with Andrew Newberg, a neurobiologist, a professor of radiology of Jefferson University, who has scanned the brains of thousands of people that are meditating, that are practicing shamanism, that are doing all kinds of things around the world. And he has some incredible facts to share. You will hear from us next Saturday. Bye-bye.